This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire. Produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A U R A L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck was on his
Lizmark.
Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place with a big bush play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Sex me so good, I say blah blah blah. Work it, I need a glass of water. Boy, oh boy, it's good to know ya. Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. If you got a big, let me search it. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. Coming at you live here on this Tuesday evening. A very special episode that we wanted to squeeze in here because we're getting perilously close to episode number 400. So let me go ahead and bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 399 of the Mothership. Perilously close with the precipice. Of four bills.
Knocking on the doorstep.
It's going to be a fun show. Looking
I feel
forward
like
to
you've been teasing 400 since, like, I don't know, December 2013?
since 302?
Yeah, pretty much.
Which seems
but we're
like
here.
For, forever, but yes, we are here tonight. It is Tuesday, because last night we had a fun show. I got to be a guest on the award-winning, super fantastic, crazily great Kevin Kelly show.
Yes, it was
a lot of fun.
A little WrestleMania weekend preview. So
yes.
Ben
yep.
Morris joined us. Of course, McGinn was there and Kevin and myself. So a lot of fun. So check that out if you haven't heard it yet because we preview everything.
Yes. Yep. Hall of Fame. We previewed the show itself. You guys did, obviously, some of the ROH stuff. Kevin will be in the Lone Star State that weekend for their show. I didn't realize they're when he said that, he had said that, oh, we're going to be at the, what was it, the
some
Dallas Hyatt or something. I'm like, yeah, that's where you're staying, but is that where they're wrestling? And he's like, yeah, in the ballroom. Weird.
Yeah. Way to give away where he's sleeping, by the way.
Well, maybe he's not staying there. He might be staying.
Right. I think the show's just there. I don't have to stay in there.
Probably at a Motel 6 or something.
Yeah, that's where the ballroom is where the show is. So.
Yeah. So, anyway, check it out. It's fun. Fun listen.
As always, but tonight we have a fun listen lined up for you as well. Because like Scott said, 399, episode 400 hopefully will be here for you next week. But we wanted to quickly pop in and continue through our eventual travails, of course, as we wrapped up 2005 last episode with Armageddon and as we move into the year 2006.
Indeed. And
hey, what is going on here?
I don't know what's going on here, you. I thought you were off on Tuesdays. But that's okay. Sorry that you're here. Tonight, JR, we enter, I don't say uncharted waters, but we're going to talk about a year that probably not a lot of people remember. And if they do, they don't remember it fondly.
Yeah.
So the key thing is our goal is to
continue
not remember it fondly, but at least break down why.
Yeah.
And of course, we're talking about the year in wrestling 2006.
And it's a year that I definitely don't remember fondly, and it's really the first one in a long time. Because even 2003, I knew there was some good stuff hidden in there, and 2004, I know started well, and even 2005 was surprisingly better than we expected. 06, I really don't remember too much positive outside of maybe the first couple months. Like, I feel like maybe through Mania we're okay, and we just go right down the shitter following that. That's my memory of the year. And I was pretty tapped in at the time. I remember watching a lot of these shows, ordering a lot of them at the time. And I just don't remember really digging them, even though I was pretty locked in on the product. Like, I definitely watched Raw every week. I probably watched SmackDown mostly. I even went to a house show at URI, you know, that year. So a lot of different stuff. But I just remember not being too crazy about it. And in my memory, in retrospect, from what I've rewatched when we did our written reviews, it does not hold up. But I'm curious. Maybe this time around it will. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm a little ready for it myself, particularly the back end of 06, like post-SummerSlam.
Right.
I don't remember a myriad of stuff. I mean, there's a major retirement and a really great match and stuff like that. But when we get into, like, October, like No Mercy on, it's a big blur. Most of the early stuff, I kind of remember pretty well. But I'm looking forward to when we get to, like, SummerSlam, Unforgiven, back end of 2006, as we get into 07, which is another year that a lot of people seem to not remember much. But anyway, we'll get there. Tonight, inside the big steel box, we open up 2006 with New Year's Revolution. At the time, JR.
Revolution. Yes.
Did you feel we still needed a second pay-per-view in January?
No, I don't feel like we ever needed more than 12 at the most. I will say that. However, it doesn't matter because they did it anyway.
So. Yeah, well, that's true. This is the other thing that we'll talk about in 2006 is just the glutton of shows. And November and December is just ridiculous. And we'll get to that when we get there in terms of, like, you know, pay-per-views, because there's just so many of them in such a small period of time at a time of year where people, obviously, you know, buying Christmas gifts and Hanukkah gifts and things like that. And, you know, meanwhile, you're spending $100 on three pay-per-views and maybe one of them was halfway decent. But anyway, we'll get there.
Right. I think a lot of those, too, I was, like, you know, pitching in with, you know, Andy and Jim. So at least, you know, not paying full price, I probably would have been a little bit more pissed off. We talked about last week, right, that 06 is like the year with ridiculously the most. What do we say, 15?
There's 15 in 2000. Two in January, two in June. I think either two in October or two in November and two in December. Right. So
there's a ton.
4 months, there's two pay-per-views.
I mean, it's only the second New Year's Revolution. So, I mean, I guess we weren't to the point yet where you could say, all right, this is a real throwaway, because last year's was pretty good in Puerto Rico. We had the Chamber. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course we have the Chamber again here. And we haven't had a Raw specific show in a little bit of time since what, mid-October?
Cyber Sunday. Or Taboo Tuesday was last.
So whenever that was. We haven't had a show since then. So yeah, we'll kind of do it for a Raw only show, because really if you don't have this one here, your next one's Backlash.
Yeah.
Or they could have changed February, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kinda hard to, particularly when you have John Cena, who we're gonna talk extensively about this evening. How do you not have him on a solo show until the end of April? Because this year, WrestleMania is in April, so Backlash is the back end of April.
Right.
So you're talking about almost a full, you know, 7 months between Raw-specific pay-per-views. So I think that's why they did that. It was more for brand-specific.
So it makes a lot of sense why they had Revolution.
Right. January 8th, 2006, live from the Pepsi Arena in Albany, New York. An old bastion of WWE pay-per-view. Of course, JR, no strangers to this building. Used to be the old Knickerbocker Arena. This show, by the way, this pay-per-view, puts New York at the moment in time back ahead of California, 1918, in the pay-per-view state race. This was New York's 19th pay-per-view. California was at 18. And this is the Capitals' first show since?
Rumble 92.
No. A show you should know very well. Your boy won his first world title. No Mercy 2000.
There you go.
Your boy Kurt Angle won his first world title that night. So.
Big pass again.
Yes. Your attendance, an even 11,000, which actually is a little more than I remember thinking it was, because a lot of these secondary shows have been in like the 7,000, 8,000 range.
Yeah.
Even the buy rate, 0.85. Not bad for a week into the new year, not bad.
Raw was a strong brand still name-wise. I mean, you knew you were getting Shawn, Angle, Triple H, Cena. You know, like you were getting a lot of names when you look
right.
at Raw. It's not, you know, SmackDown's a little light, but you at least knew you were getting some top-level talent. Whether or not you knew what the card was at the time, you at least knew you were getting some good yes. you know, guys on the show.
Exactly. So 0.85, pretty good. And your announcers now officially, I don't have to say it anymore, no longer in the catacombs mm-hmm. at ringside because we no longer have Eric Bischoff running things. The voices of the red brand, Joey Styles, the coach, Jonathan Coachman, and Jerry the King Lawler, but he comes in about halfway through the, well, I would say what, about 45 minutes into the show.
Right.
I'll tell you why when we get there. JR, our Sutan report.
Okay. Let's see what he's got going on. Do you remember the song, the theme song for this evening?
No.
Was stricken by Disturbed, one of our favorite bands.
Disturbed. Here. It's like their 11th pay-per-view song or something.
Sponsored by?
It was something weird. Was it some PlayStation game?
The WWE DVD board game.
Oh, I have that. I have two of them, actually. The original and then the updated version, which was better than the original.
I couldn't get enough.
Did you get the game?
No.
No?
I don't believe so.
No. It wasn't that game. It was very complicated, but it was pretty
I had some like VHS boxing game growing up, and I think that like ruined me for games because it was so bad and I couldn't figure it out that I just never bought like those DVD or VHS games again.
Well, it's funny. I got, like you and I have talked about, I know one of your favorite board games as a kid, as was mine, was Clue, right? You're a big Clue mm-hmm. fan. I actually had Clue, the VHS game. It was actually really cool.
You know what? I did have that too, or I played it. I do remember that.
It was very cool. I had all Clues. I had the regular Clue, and then there was Clue Master Detective, which, yeah, it was like four extra rooms and a bunch of extra people. And then the Clue VHS game, which is pretty badass. So, anyway. No, I didn't. I remember vaguely it today. I thought it was a PlayStation or an Xbox game, but that's it was a game nonetheless. So, the DVD game.
Oh, there you go. All right, our champion is still John Cena, who's in day 280 of his reign. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair in day 112 of his Intercontinental reign. Big Show and Kane day 68 of their tag team title reign, and Trish Stratus day 360 of her title reign. So I guess she won it. Was it
at New Year's Revolution the year before?
Lita got hurt. No, wasn't she champ going into that? I don't remember.
No, because Lita won that big. Match in December of 2004, that awesome match.
But didn't that match end in something weird? Did she pin her? Why am I having, like, no remembrance of that?
No, she won the title that night. Remember, that was a big deal. It was the first.
Well, I know Lita got hurt.
Yeah, but she won the match.
Okay.
She won the title,
right,
and then
right,
Trish won it
off.
Back.
Jeez.
You're in.
Such
you
a white
shows night. You do shows with Kevin too much.
No, usually I'm listening to Will chew a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
No, my cat's not on my head.
So anyway. Okay, so it's been a year for Trish.
Yeah, it's been a year for Trish.
Wonderful year. So Raw, 658 episodes, Heat 387, Impact 80. On 1-6, we had a release. Do you remember who it was?
1-6? Oh, God.
I'm gonna read you everything but his name and see if you can guess just based on the story.
Okay.
So Blank was released from the company due to bad behavior backstage out of his, well, that's all he really gives. Out of his 45 matches to the promotion, he was 9-2 during his final match, which aired the same day as released. He ignored Doty's request to tone down his aerial moves.
Oh, Hoovy.
That's right. I think we kind of talked about that last time.
I think we talked about it. Yeah, we talked about it at Armageddon. Yeah, Hoovy.
On 1-7, the promotion made its debut at Ogdensburg, New York, at the Newell Memorial Dome when Mark Henry defeated Batista in the SmackDown main event. So there you go. So,
wow.
Random fun fact. New Year's Revolution Heat, Chavo Guerrero defeated Snitsky.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. These are your Sutton facts. That's all we need.
There you go. Isn't it weird? Think about it, though. Just fathom this for a minute. We're in January of 06, and you've been watching, we've both been watching Raw now for, at this point, almost an even 13 years. Doesn't it feel like there's been more than 658 episodes, even at this point?
Yeah, it feels like this is like 7,000.
Exactly.
Well, they just hit 1,000 a few years ago, right?
2012, they hit 1,000, yeah. So, okay.
It's all the stupid dog show preemptions. It would have been there just a little bit quicker.
Ugh, son of a bitch.
Well, that's
right.
The dog, yes. Son of a bitch.
Bonnie Hammer couldn't even get us through the Attitude Era.
Rod Perth, that prick.
Yeah. God, stupid chihuahuas. All right. Let's open the show. A lot of title matches tonight, JR.
Brad must have loved for you.
I was about to say, Brad must have loved Armageddon 05 because we played practically nothing tonight.
Tired of Mr. Hinscrooge.
back to the cavalcade of hits. Yeah, our first title defense includes our Intercontinental Champion, the Nature Boy, of course, survive, well, I guess split his feud with Triple H, but retained his Intercontinental Championship. So how did we get to this point?
On 12/5, Edge and Lita hosted an episode of The Cutting Edge, and they announced that Ric Flair would be their guest. It ended up being a ruse, as Flair was not in the building due to some recent marital issues and a well-publicized bout of road rage. As Edge ripped on Flair's personal life, fellow legends Sergeant Slaughter and Michael Hayes came down to defend the Nature Boy. Edge and Hayes would kick things up a notch with a nasty back and forth, including Edge ripping on the late Terry Gordy, and Hayes telling Edge he has no respect for the legends of the business and claimed he was only on TV because he was banging Matt Hardy's ex-girlfriend. Edge had enough and laid out both legends to end the segment. On 12/26, Edge and Lita had a fake Ric Flair show up on the Titantron and took more shots at Nate, claiming he stole his whole shtick from other influences. Flair showed up in the ring and assaulted Edge to get some revenge. Later in the show, Vince McMahon announced that Flair would defend his IC title against Edge on the pay-per-view. And on 1/2, Edge showed a fake amateur footage of Flair's road rage incident where he played the role of Flair. In a funny video, Edge did a good job mocking him, wearing the robe and dropping the elbow and wooing all over the road. Flair came out, assaulted Edge, and put Lita in the figure four. So they heated this one up pretty quick, and it gets testy over the next few weeks here, including this show.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Hayes thing? I remember they got like wicked hype going into it, like, or coming out of it rather. Like, everyone was like going nuts about that promo segment.
Yeah, no, definitely, because we hadn't, you know, we hadn't talked to, you know, he hadn't been on camera, obviously, and that promo got pretty personal. Because at this point, anytime you mention Matt Hardy, even though the feud's over, when you mention it in a promo, you know, everyone assumes it's a shoot.
Right.
Even though, you know, they feuded about it for for 5 months or whatever it was. But I do remember getting nasty and you know, talking about, I think ripping Terry Gordy was the thing because, you know, Terry Gordy, everyone said was the workhorse of the Freebirds.
And he just died?
No, he died in 2000. Alive? Yeah, he died
in
2000.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Okay.
Yeah. But still, though, he hadn't really been mentioned much. So it was interesting. But there was definitely a lot of heat. I think
July 16, 2001, he passed away.
2001, okay. So he and Edge, I think people were realizing too, and we'll talk about it obviously as the show progresses, that by 2006 it's been April 3rd, 2005. So we're talking almost 9 months since he won the briefcase. It's time to, you know, shit or get off the pot, obviously. What's happening here? So I think as the time the year turned, obviously he was dealing with injury issues because he wasn't on every pay-per-view in 05. He was on camera, but he wasn't wrestling.
280 days he's had the briefcase.
Yeah. So at this point, I think as the calendar turned to 2006, I think people realizing it's time to, you know, when the hell is this going to happen?
Yeah,
is he actually going to do it in Mania?
Cash in, stay healthy, do something, or stop getting hurt, you know, enough.
Right.
Enough already.
So I think this was a big moment for Edge going into 06 to really amp it up because I think people were starting to doubt whether this was legit or not, so...
All right, so the match itself, unique feud, I thought. A good use of Flair to help continue to build up Edge's resume during this time. Edge had some really good dickhead heel work going on. Edge attacks from behind and clubs away with some anger. Flair comes back with some chops and chases Lita, but gets mowed down by an Edge clothesline on the floor. Edge keeps bringing it, getting cockier and cockier as the match goes along. Flair tries to chop back into the match, but Edge shoves him to the floor. Flair catches Edge coming outside and crotches him on the barricade. And then Flair hits a chop to the head off the top rope and goes to work on the knee. Flair pulls Lita to the ring and knocks Edge to the floor to a big pop. Flair then gets the figure four on Lita, once again like he did on Raw, as the crowd goes nuts, but Edge bashes him in the face with the briefcase with a DQ. Flair gets busted open, really nasty cut. Edge hammers away at the cut and then smashes him with another really gross case shot to the face. I thought it was a solid match. I thought the finish made sense because they're kind of in the corner. They don't want to put the IC belt on Edge. You can't beat him. And there was good heat for this one, too, and they had some good chemistry. So this is a feud you kind of want to see continue. And it definitely looked like this was just step one for sure. But Edge, still a big asshole. And what did you think of the match? But also, what did you think of those briefcase shots?
The match I liked. It was very stiff. I think Edge told a great story, and of course Flair acquiesced, and I think they worked very well together. Briefcase shots were stiff, and I think we're at the point now. And I mean, when it comes to Flair, you know, there's not much I dislike, but I think getting busted open, it's getting a bit much now. I mean, he was busted open. The two blade shots in the two Triple H matches were just disgusting. and probably relatively unhealthy for a 50-something-year-old guy. Do we really need another? You know, he could have got beat down by Edge without needing another disgusting blade job. So
yeah.
that was my only thing.
Right, they could have done the case shots without the bleeding.
Yeah, the match was very good. I enjoyed it. It was stiff again. Like I said, I think they both told a good story, and I think we really needed to. I think we really needed to build up the real viciousness of Edge that he's starting to get. Starting to get that animosity and that kind of anxiousness going, like, all right, you know, I need my shot. I'm running out of time. Mm-hmm. You know, April 2nd in Chicago is, not far away anymore. So I'm getting antsy now. I got to do something. I got to pick my spot, you know, and you could see it in this match. He's on, no pun intended, on edge. And, so I think a great job by him, amping up the whole kind of, I don't want to say paranoia, but anxiety of, all right, I gotta do something now. I have this briefcase. I was able to kind of goof off and, you know, giggle and work my way through the rest of 2005. But now, oh my God, right. In 3 months, I gotta do something. So I think that was fantastic. Having said that, the briefcase shots were very, very harsh and were fine if we didn't need Flair gushing three more pints out of them. I mean, you know, those two Triple H matches were disgusting enough. We really didn't need.
I mean,
another.
In a way, it helps. I mean, if you had to do it, at least it's Edge, and he's kind of set up for a big night, and you're setting up this really, you know, big feud. So I'm not a huge fan of it, but they at least kind of did it, you know, correctly,
mm-hmm.
I guess I've had to say. I like the story, too, where Edge was really cocky the whole time, and as soon as Flair shows anything, Edge just panics and bashes him with the briefcase. And,
right, exactly.
You know, it kind of plays into things later that we'll see where he probably didn't want to risk like getting hurt or getting anything screwed up, so he'll just either DQ and not really care and just
yeah. The IC title meant nothing to him.
It's more about getting out healthy.
Yeah, and beating the crap out of Flair and you know punishing him. The title was meaningless. He's in his eyes. He's already crossed that bridge.
And the road rage thing was funny too. Not the actual incident, but the Edge.
Yes,
remake.
No, I remember the gag. It was very funny. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, the wig and the robe on and everything.
Yeah. So there you go. Ric Flair retains his Intercontinental Championship. I didn't think he'd have a belt this long, with a disqualification win over Edge.
All right, so now we go backstage. Kurt Angle's interview, setting him up for the main event. Still has Daivari with him. And then he says some weird things. He says he hopes USA loses the war. He says his favorite country's France. He doesn't like black people. And he wants to make Jesus tap out. He says he could say that stuff, and he'll still get cheered, Scott, because he's so damn great. I thought this was a good tease. Like, you wonder where he's going. And then, you know, basically says the truth. They're not going to boo me because they weren't. They were cheering him left to right, even though he was
pretty
real.
Much.
And also, you can kind of believe all these things because he's so whacked out of his mind.
Yes, that is true. He was getting to that point, most definitely. Yeah. Let's get back to the ring for our second title match of the evening, JR. The Women's Championship on the line. Your champion, as we mentioned, she has held the belt for exactly 1 year. Your girl, Trish Stratus, who won the title at last year's New Year's Revolution when she beat Lita, who had a bum knee.
Yes, 380 days ago.
Yep, that was when her Lita injured her knee in that match. Remember, the match was supposed to be much longer. It ended up only being like 4 minutes. It was probably supposed to be longer. Taking on the crazy bisexual or straight-up lesbian, whatever the heck it is, but it made for some fun entertainment. Tell us about it.
Bisexual. This interesting relationship rolled on the 11/28 Raw when Mickey, Trish, and Ashley won a six-woman match, and Mickey nabbed Trish's belt and mimicked her pose out of admiration. On December 12th, Trish was backstage trying to pump herself up to tell Mickey to back off. Before she could get her feelings out, Mickey ran in and told Trish how happy she was that they were friends, and she used to watch Trish and with her grandfather, who was a big fan. But now that he's passed away, she was honored to become friends with Trish. Of course, after hearing that, Trish couldn't go through with what she was going to plan on doing, and instead just kind of wished Mickey luck. Things took a very bizarre turn from there on 12/26 when Mickey decorated Trish's locker room for Christmas, including mistletoe. After Mickey talked about Trish giving her a title match as a Christmas gift, Trish was trying to process everything. Mickey referenced the mistletoe and planted a full kiss on her idol. Trish freaked out and took off as Mickey nervously and furiously apologized for her actions. The next week, things got weirder when Trish was taking a shower and Mickey came in to apologize for the week before. Trish freaked out and grabbed her towel, but as she was wrapping up, Mickey praised the quality of her boobs and then skipped off merrily, leaving Trish in bewilderment. So, yeah, It seems like we have a lesbian stalker gimmick going on here, but it's unwinding nicely. It's, you know, they're not forcing it. It's not heavy-handed.
Right.
Mickey's playing it well. Trish is playing it well, and it, you know, there's some depth to it. It's really well done to this point. So, you know, very rare for Women's Feud to be in this position. And both, of course, are really good in the ring and really good looking and have a lot of depth to the story. So rare for WWE to have this kind of package together.
Exactly.
At this point. Mickey kissing Trish, of course, like we mentioned, was a great moment. And Mickey's all hyped up and excited. Trish pulls her in and talks shit during the handshake. And Mickey looks all confused because she's playing all nicey nice. Mm-hmm. Trish controls early with a side headlock, but Mickey pushes free. Trish spikes Mickey on her head in a botched spot and then gets dumped to the floor. Mickey still's playing nice, holding the ropes, and lets Trish back in the ring. Trish still seems untrusting, and then Trish frustrates Mickey, trips her up, and lays in a series of forearms. Mickey blocks a head scissors takedown and tries a tornado DDT, but Trish shoves her off and kicks her to the floor. Mickey grabs the belt and admires it and considers using it, but doesn't. Trish then dodges the clothesline and hits the Thez press and hammers away. Trish dominates the match as Mickey looks over her head. Trish hits a head scissors on a second try and then gets a spine buster for a near fall. Mickey hits Trish with Stratisfaction, but plays to the crowd and soaks it up too much and only gets a near fall. Mickey then misses a kick, and Trish hits her chick kick for the win. As it was a fun match, Trish dominated most of it, and then the ending got really good with the closing moments where Mickey almost steals the win but didn't move quick enough. You know, Trish wrestled angry and added a lot of aggression to the match, and I liked it. I thought they worked it well, and I like it when you know it's continuing and you know this is kind of the appetizer for a future match and that they're continuing the story. I thought this worked perfectly.
Yeah, they worked, again, another match that was relatively stiff. I mean, they hit each other pretty good. And the whole story of Trish, clearly more experienced, so they didn't make Mickey look too even with her, because they shouldn't have. She should have been not in her league, but not enough to the point where the match, you know, is such a foregone conclusion, you're not invested in it. And I applaud the creative for making sure that that's not the case. I don't think any of us expected Mickey to win. So the question was the storytelling at the end, and pretty much she did that.
You don't think Mickey had, I don't know. I mean, it could have been a case where you think she wins and then Trish wins it back in Mania or something. Maybe she like kisses her again or catches her off guard and steals the win. I don't think it was that much of a foregone conclusion.
I don't know. I definitely thought that the feud was going to continue, I thought they wanted Mickey to win it when she was a full-blown heel, not in this like half 50-50 role. So that was my reason for not expecting the belt to change hands, because I knew eventually Mickey was going to probably turn full heel. So
right.
Wasn't totally expecting it. But I mean, it wouldn't have been a realm out of possibility, and it would have probably been even more entertaining of a storyline if the roles are reversed and Mickey's like, Trish, you're my favorite, and thanks for giving me the match. And it's almost like she's nicely taunting Trish, like, I have the belt now, ha ha ha, but I'm being nice to you so you can't be a bitch back to me, kind of thing. So you could have worked it in a different way. So right. I don't disagree with you in that aspect. I just personally didn't think that they would do it yet. I think there was more to go before they would, but the match was great. Trish really has, it's amazing over the last, I'll say, 3 years, or 2 years since we're at the beginning of 2006, 2 years what she's turned into. I mean, remember we used to talk about it back in 2000, 2001, how much of a mess she was.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are, and she's the torchbearer of the division. She's been this for close to 2 years now, or almost three.
Yep.
You know, with women who many would think are more talented than she is, like Jazz and, you know, and Gail Kim and, even Victoria, everybody who you would think on the surface was more talented than Trish. And we'll get more into this throughout 2006. But she's really, this proves that this girl worked her ass off to be this good. And it shows dictating the pace as a pretty much a baby, obviously full-blown baby face against whatever you could call Trish at this point. I mean, Mickey. So it's a fantastic match. And there's more to come. And again, I agree with you about all the entendres and all the innuendos and of course the full blown kiss. It wasn't like 2002 Bischoff, you know, HLA where it's like, oh my God, she's like touching her and all this stuff. It's all innuendo and banter, which makes it even more entertaining. So.
And you don't know too deep down. I mean, is this something like Razor Ramon and Goldust back in the day where
is she doing this
pure mind games? Is she doing it just to get in Trish's head and get her title? You know, or is she seriously attracted to her. So there was a lot of that ambiguity too. Yep. No, it's a really good storyline, especially for the women at this time. Not something you often see in this division. So, you know, and they're both hot. So that helps.
Yeah, but that certainly does not hurt matters. So there you go. Trish Stratus retains her women's championship in a very good match against Mickie James, but more to come from these two. We go backstage again, Jared.
Yeah, we do, where Shelton Benjamin and his mama arrive at the arena. She berates him for doing nothing for a whole year and promises things are going to change. She tells him he has to eat. And then we see Edge, who doesn't want to sit on the web access with fans and has Lita do it instead. But we'll talk more about Shelton and his mama in a bit.
Ugh. Ugh. Cannot. I can wait for that. Next up, a match that involves, for the second straight year, the King hits the ring. Except this time it's a guy who had a much-needed character and attitude change, and I was very excited about this. How do we get here, JR?
Well, on 10-17, way back then, Kurt Angle assaulted the Hurricane, left him laid out in the ring, and during the break, Hurricane ripped off his mask and smacked his friend Rosie in anger. A week later, Hurricane no-showed a title match, leaving Rosie to fight two men. During the match, he appeared on the entrance ramp in street clothes and announced he was done entertaining the crowd and carrying Rosie in the ring. The partnership ended in 11-7 when the newly rechristened Gregory Helms pinned Rosie in a match. After spending time on heat, Helms popped up with a 1-2 Raw to confront Jerry Lawler over jokes Lawler had made at his expense. Prior to Helms showing up, Jonathan Coachman showed footage of Helms taking Lawler to task for hiding behind a mic and talking trash. Helms then called King into the ring. Lawler would proceed to call Helms boring, and Helms would retaliate by smacking him in the face. Lawler smacked him back, and a match was set up here at the pay-per-view. So, it sounds like you were happy to see the Hurricane go.
Yeah, I think we were due. Everyone knew that Greg Helms was a fantastic worker, really good in the ring. But let's be honest, the Hurricane really has been there since you know, the Alliance in 2001. He's been in this gimmick for, you know, 4 years. Mm-hmm. It was due to end and for him to, you know, could use a nice fresh heel, and particularly in the cruiserweight division. So it was definitely time. I know the Silverback there was upset because the Hurricane's his guy, but it needed to happen. It needed a change of pace here and to have him in kind of a, you know, heel cocky role. I think it worked.
Yeah, I agree. It was definitely worth a shot. We know he's talented enough. The Hurricane was obviously taking him nowhere. It was kind of now like, all right, you know, do we keep moving forward with this guy? Do we dump him? Does he just settle in and be Hurricane forever? Or do we try and recoup something and make him a serious, you know, character and contender? So, you know, a good gimmick change. The Hurricane clearly had run its course. Lawler dragged back into the ring for this mini feud. Coach puts over the Helms his new character for having a chip on his shoulder. Helms takes the King down and gloats. King is biding his time. Comes back with a slam and his usual great punches and then chucks Helms to the floor. Helms goes to the eyes and takes over and works some basic offense, hitting a nice suplex and some strikes. Helms dodges a comeback and lays in stiff kicks using an aggressive style. Hits a missile dropkick for near fall, really controlling the whole match. Lawler punches his way back in, but Helms blocks the pile driver, gets crotched on the top rope and falls to the mat. And then King hits the fist drop for the shocking win. And I thought this was an awful finish that completely sandbagged Helms. It made no sense. It seemed like a vanity win for King. And even if you want to say, like, you know, they're trying to build Helms's anger that he was getting, none of it made sense. Like, he didn't need to lose to the fucking King at this point. After looking good on offense, he dominated the match, and all you're going to remember is that he lost to Jerry Lawler in his big first showcase match. And I don't care if we've seen him for like 4 years as the Hurricane or however long it's been. Like, that, to me, that doesn't matter. You're giving this guy a reboot. You're trying to make him a serious player on the card, on Raw or SmackDown, wherever he's going to go. And you have the King just beat him in a nothing forgettable match clean. I mean, there's no interference. There's no trickery. You know, at least give me a count out where he walks out or something. But to actually have King pin him with the fist drop, awful decision.
Absolutely. Now you might as well make him the Hurricane again. I mean, right. It's I loved his theme song. I remember hearing it today. I remembered how much I really liked it. But just no sense whatsoever. There was no sense at all to this. Brand new guy. What does King need to win matches at all for? It's stupid. I mean, he jobs to Muhammad Hassan the year before in a much more questionable gimmick than maybe this was. And here you have him win clean? I don't get it. And speaking of Lawler, I have to say, and I made a point, I mentioned this to our one of our chats today. I really thought that Joey and Coach worked really well together. I felt like they were a fresh team compared to JR and the King. So I was very much entertained by Joey and Coach when they were alone together.
Well, what have you thought about Joey so far? Because my memory was that he was great. And I don't know if that's because I had JR burnout. I don't know if it was because I liked him in ECW. I haven't been completely enthralled with him. He was good with Coach here. And he's been a little bit better here than he was with his basic no-show at Survivor Series in the main event. I don't know. I don't know if he's trying too hard, if he's like... He feels like he's torn. Like, he's still trying to do the dirty style, but he's trying to be himself and placate his old fans, so he's mixing in some of that. He doesn't seem to, like... He hasn't settled into a comfort zone yet. He feels like he doesn't know where he should be. And it seems like he's actually rocked his confidence a bit. And he seemed to me, for a long time, one of the most like confident announcers ever. And he comes in here, and it's almost like he doesn't know which way to go.
At times, maybe. But I think having a fresh... I'm going to disagree with you just a little bit. Because I think if Lawler was with him...
Well, no, I'm saying overall. Not just this match. I'm talking his whole run.
No, I know. But I'm
Lawler's
saying...
Lawler's been with him.
Right, but that's my point. With Lawler with him, I think your theory holds a lot of water. But I think in tonight, a different color guy straight up without Lawler there as well, which will happen as he comes back later on, I think gave him a little bit more confidence. I think the thing at first was that we wanted to hear ECW Joey. And you're not going to get that because this isn't ECW. You know, you can't throw the, like, everybody wanted to hear the "Oh my gods," and he would do it occasionally, but he really wouldn't blow it out of proportion. And maybe you could use that as a crutch when he was in ECW. Mind you, he always worked alone. Very rarely did he have a commentator.
But,
so,
but his, the stuff that made you like him in ECW wasn't the "Oh my gods" and the cat fights. It was him, the way he could talk about the match, the holds, and also tell the story. But I think a big part of his popularity with ECW have to do with the time that it was cool for him to go out there and rip Nitro and rip WWF and, you know, screw those guys. ECW is the best. Like, that was a big part of his shtick. And I'm rewatching ECW now, like from 94, and that's a lot of it. You know, I mean, like, just dumping on everything. And it was unique because the other promotions couldn't do that or get away with it at the time. So he was like, "Hey, come here. We're the smart fans. We can talk about everything and shit on whatever we want." You know, he was basically a you know, blog poster, you know,
as a play-by-play guy
10 years earlier or 15 years earlier. You know what I mean? Like, he's
right.
He fit right into the old blog of doom. You know what I mean? Like, he's, yeah, that's what he was at the time, just shit on everything. But, you know, that didn't translate. So he had to change his game coming in, and he's astute. Like, he knows what he's doing. He knows the holes. He's really good. Does his homework. But it seems like he's just kind of trapped in between what he wants to be and what he was at this point. And, you know, it's tough to say because we're only really getting snippets of him. We, you know, got him at Cyber Sunday or Tabby Tuesday. We got him Survivor Series for half the show. We get him here. We don't get much of him until he gets the boot. So, you know, we're not rewatching the Raws. I'd have to go back and rewatch him as Raws and see if his commentary holds up week to week. I remember the time liking it a lot. But again, I think I was pretty burnt on JR at the time.
Yeah, I was too. And the product was changing continuously. The product's evolving, and maybe it was time for a, you know, a lot of people think that Vince was just being a jerk about getting rid of JR. But admittedly, product was changing. The guys that JR made famous in his announcing, other than Triple H, who's still there, but Foley, you know, Taker for the most part's on the other show, you know, Rock, Austin, like, those guys are gone now. So, maybe it was time for this new era to have a new voice, and Joey could have really gotten over. But there's credence to your theory that he was not entirely comfortable. But I tell you, I didn't really totally see it in the show so far. I thought him and Coach were really good, so maybe he had found a comfort zone here. Maybe he realized,
and maybe this is Coach's comfort zone too.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping that we wouldn't, you know, and I mean, we don't want to bash Jerry. I mean, it's not his fault that. I don't think he politicked to beat Helms. I don't think that was the point, but no. I think it would have been nice. I mean, I hope he didn't. I mean, no, make no sense, but I was hoping we wouldn't see Jerry the rest of the night. He takes the night off, and him and Coach could go solo the rest of the show, because I really thought they were great together. I thought that, you know, Coach didn't go overboard with the heel stuff. He, you know, he gave Joey a chance to get out, you know, do what he needed to do and tell the story properly. So I was hoping they'd stay together, the two of them, for the whole show, and they, you know, Jerry would come back in a little bit. But your theory definitely makes a lot of sense, I think, on the Raws. But I definitely think that he got comfortable as this show progressed. But there's no doubt that he's not the Joey of 1995. That there's no doubt about that.
Right.
But again, he has to adapt to a different product. That's the number one thing. This isn't, you know, I was about to say, this isn't a bunch of, you know, come on, I want to lay a lesbians, although we did have Mickey James. But I mean, you know, it's different. We're not talking about, you know, Brian Lee throwing Tommy Dreamer off a 9-story table tower thing. You know, it's very different. So I'm sure that's the main reason why he was uncomfortable. This is like polished television and polished wrestling. This isn't, you know, the bingo hall that smells like piss. You know, it's a different beast. And I think he definitely was skittish, I think, those first couple months on Raw. But I feel like by now, and I think Coach is a big part of it, he was getting a little more comfortable. So there you go. Jerry Lawler wins stupidly. And we're not even – and we're glossing over the fact that
– Stupid Lawler.
Stupidly. Stupidicious. And we haven't even really gotten into Helms. I mean, what do you do with him now?
Right.
I mean,
well, we'll talk about next show what they do with him, because it's the only thing they could do with him.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we'll get there.
All right. I believe you go backstage.
Yeah, we do. Mickey James thanks Trish for the match and talks about their bodies touching and how electric things were, hugs her, and is all smiles. So let's continue.
Takes her
on.
Seat on the access table. That was pretty funny.
Viscera hits on Shelton's mom and catering, and she scolds him and refuses his advances. So
break me a piece of that chocolate cream pie. Oh, God. I forgot how great Viscera was in this role. You're the goat. It was like the boogeyman, except in porn form. Yes. You know, like the colors change in the shot, and he comes over, he starts like,
asking,
you know,
her
air banging her, and
I'm a bush man.
All right,
bush man.
Time to play the game. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
What was that place called, that restaurant Leanne sent, the hidden...
Forbidden City Bistro.
Forbidden Boudoir.
Forbidden Boudoir. I think that montage was longer than the segment we had with her. All right. We continue the mid-card tour. Sounds like a It sounds like a interview segment that Dusty would have, you know? Come tip and F on the Forbidden Theater Bistro.
They said love. Love will keep us together, baby.
Well, that too. All right, we continue the mid-card tour. This was kind of an unusual feud, but, I mean, what else was either for them to do? So I guess it made some sense.
I kind of liked it.
Yeah, it was interesting. How do we get here?
Well, I mean, they really hadn't crossed paths in a while, right? Since 2000-ish?
Pretty much since the beginning of that, yeah, that late 99 into 2000, yeah. And that was barely even anything, really.
On 11/28, Big Show confronted Triple H, who was bragging about the beating he put on Ric Flair the night before. He called Hunter a piece of shit and challenged him to a fight. Before Hunter could answer, Show smacked the mic out of his hand, leading to the game backing out of the ring. 2 weeks later, Show was wrestling Shawn Michaels for a spot in the Elimination Chamber when Hunter came down and smacked Michaels with a chair, causing Show to get DQ'd and losing a shot at the title. Show got revenge later that night by costing Hunter his qualifying match against Kane, and on 12/26, both men came to the ring for a contract signing. Hunter told Show that he had no beef with him until he cost him that title shot. He then tore into Show, harkening back to 1999, when Hunter was fighting for his chance and Show was handed his for being a circus freak. Show said that Hunter had no backup around this time, and Hunter said he didn't need it, and he called Show Fat Boy before jamming a pen in his eye. Hunter would grab his sledgehammer and knock Show to the floor, and then proceeded to crush Show's hand with the hammer before signing the contract and leaving. On 1-2, Hunter was bragging, but Show surprised everyone and headed to the ring with a monster cast encasing his broken hand. Hunter slid out of the ring and grabbed a chair, which Show swatted away with the cast. Hunter again tried with the TV monitor, but Show easily deflected that as well. Hunter quickly left ringside as the announcers claimed that his plan had backfired now that Show had a great weapon to use in their match. I liked the build to this, and I think it's just the novelty of having Triple H in these feuds that don't surround titles that it's kind of neat. Mm-hmm. Like, and mm-hmm. him and Show, like I said, I mean, they were pretty fresh. They and it was cool that they, you know, referenced that feud back then. I thought it was a basic build. He cost him a title shot. Hunter got pissed and then stabbed him in the eye with a pen and broke his hand. Like, you know, we're seeing more of the sadistic Hunter that came out in the Flair series. And I like the, you know, we'll talk about the match itself, but I like the idea of setting up this big injury for Show to build in the match. And this has always been kind of one of my, I don't want to say favorite, but more kind of under the covers gem, I guess, I don't know, under the sheets.
And you think I put my foot in my mouth.
I don't know how to phrase it, but I don't want to say hidden gem because I don't think it's that good, but I don't know. I've always liked it. I'll put it that way.
Sounds like something on the Forbidden City Bistro menu.
Yes.
I'd like the under the covers chicken,
it
please.
Like, isn't that the independent tournament that Dylan Hales likes, the Forbidden City?
Yes. Yes. That's right. Wasn't that also a ECW pay-per-view or something?
Oh, I don't
or
know. Seinfeld.
Something City Showdown City. Or whatever it is. I'd like the under the cover shrimp, please.
A lot of political hits at the what's it called again?
Yes. Forbidden City.
Forbidden
Bistro.
City Invitational. Will Ospreay.
The Forbidden City Invitational.
Political hit. Redacted. Political hit. All right, go.
God.
That's all you got?
It's your turn.
My turn. You haven't done your comments.
All right,
we're good.
All right, I'm done.
No. B12. All right, another mid-card feud here for Hunter. Call Show Fat Boy, which, again, made me laugh. Show has a massive.
Pretty good.
Show has a massive club cast on his hand. Sets up for a fun story. Show tries to use the club early, but Hunter sticks and moves. Big Show uses a headbutt and chops to wear him down. Hunter lands some shots, but Show reverses a whip and sends him flying to the floor. Hunter lands a leaping knee to rattle Show, but gets caught on the floor and rammed into the post. Hunter finally makes some progress by going after the hand, stomping on it, and slamming it into the post. Hunter busts apart the cast and tears it off. It goes right to work on the hand with a precision attack. You know, they had good makeup on the hand. It was all red and swollen, and Big Show's really selling it. Show tries to keep Hunter away with a headbutt, but tumbled to the floor when Hunter ducked a charge. Hunter rams Show into the steps, hand first, and then keeps stomping on it before hooking a top wrist lock. Show works out of the hold and slugs Hunter, coming off the middle rope. Show starts to uses bulk and power. He stuffs Hunter in the corner and hits a shoulder block. Show then tries for a choke slam, but the hand gives away and he accidentally punches the ref. Hunter grabs a sledgehammer, but Big Show snaps it in half with a punch and then kicks Hunter down, but he's in serious pain after breaking the sledgehammer with that hand. He can't even grip the hand. He goes back to the headbutts instead. Show runs Hunter to the steps on the floor, but Hunter comes back and whacks the hand with a chair. Show hits a desperation spear on Hunter before a second chair shot back in the ring. Hunter uses a sledgehammer, then hits a pedigree for the win. I thought it was a really good, hard-fought match. Very basic, simple in his psychology. Everything made sense. The show selling was fantastic throughout the match. Hunter was focused on the hand. And it was a fun match. Hunter's mid-card tour continues on. Show looks strong. He fought all the way through with the clear break. And I thought they did a nice job working this match. It's one of my favorite Hunter matches in a while. It's not like a big gimmicked up, you know, fuck fest that he's been having. For just a regular, clean, one-on-one, no gimmicks needed match, I thought this was pretty good. Again, yeah, well, it's not going to knock your socks off. I'm talking like 3 stars, you know, but
right.
Just a fun, old-school blood feud, grudge match, no weapons needed, really.
Right. Today when I was, you know, I usually follow either Wiki or our old review, and I looked at the duration of the match. I'm like, 16:11? Oh, God. I don't remember it. And then I watched it. I'm like, it's actually a pretty fast 16 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, they told a very good story, almost split the match in half. The first, like, 5 or 6 minutes is Big Show just punching everything. Then he does the screw-up where he punches the post and loosens the cast, and then Triple H spends the next few minutes trying to rip the cast off, and he kicks the cast off.
Like friggin' Jason Pierre-Paul's cast.
Yeah, it was like an oven mitt with an anvil in it or something. It was
massive club.
And they spent the next, you know, few minutes trying to – then they pull it off, and it has all that, you know, the typical, like, WWF fake injury stuff. Like, they paint his knuckles, you know, red from – they were broken or whatever.
Yeah, he sold. The selling was great. I mean, he really sold.
Yeah.
Even when that one spot where it's a little crazy, he breaks a sledgehammer, but then he, like, sells it immediately after. Like, he can't even, like, close the hand, you know?
Yeah, no. I got to give Big Show a lot of credit here because it was a tough story to tell when you actually don't have an injury. And you're – it's one thing to limp a lot and that kind of thing, but when you're trying to wrestle a match and try to remember that you have an injured hand rather than actually having an injured hand, trying to wrestle one-handed when you're not – when you don't have to is probably pretty hard. So – and to Hunter's credit, it's not often – another reason that this match is very unique and kind of fun is that it's not often that Hunter has to be the smaller guy. You know, we haven't had the Kane feud since 2002. And I mean, honestly, since then, how many big dudes has he wrestled? I mean, Goldberg really doesn't count. So it's not often that Hunter kind of bounces a lot. Like, he actually takes a page from his boy Sean's book and does a lot of bouncing and selling because he normally doesn't have to wrestle a guy bigger than him. So that was very unique. And the end was very frenetic with the, you know, trying to choke slam left-handed and all that. And Hunter would come with a half pedigree, like, you know, couldn't hook his arms all the way kind of thing. So the psychology really worked, because it's something unfamiliar to at least Triple H. And it worked pretty well. Like I said, it was a nice old school match. It didn't have to be, you know, a 47-minute Bad Blood 04 shit show with weapons and all this crazy chapters and everything. It was just a straight-up good mid-card match, two guys who hate each other's guts, and the psychology going in was great. I remember one line, the Fat Boy line was good, but I like to enjoy when, I forgot what it was, and Big Show just tells him, you know, you really don't have any friends. Nobody likes you. I feel like every Raw feud was like the feud of shoot comments. You know, it's like, you do realize nobody likes you.
I also feel like Show is slowly looking more and more like Matt Rotella during this phase. The hairline's getting a little further back.
Yes. He's getting all disheveled and
sloppy looking, all fucking hunched over, hurting.
Yeah, we'll document this, as we get through 2006, Big Show just starts looking worse and worse.
I heard he was here, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but when we get to the middle of the year and into the fall, he's looking, I mean, we think he's going to die. That's right. How bad he looks. But to his credit, great match. Like you said, not 5 stars or anything, but it's one of those cases where on paper or on screen, when you look at it, you're like, oh, good grief. And then afterwards, you're like, wow, that was a fast 16 minutes. And it told a pretty good story. And it was a unique Triple H match that's not the normal formulaic a Triple H match. And, you know, you had some fun with it. So he wins a match. And at this point, as 2006 dawns, I don't know if you're 100% sure what the future holds for him. What is his role as we get towards the Rumble and towards WrestleMania season? What is his role? Everything's a little ambiguous at the moment, which is good. You like that. So he wins the match, but I mean, are we running out of mid-card guys to face? Very interesting. So Triple H wins again, little over 16 minutes. And if you throw it on the network, you'll be pleasantly entertained. It's a better match than you think. It's not slow and dumpy, and it's also not an overbooked shit show of weapons.
Triple H is going to hit the shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster ball?
No, we're not.
All right, so there you go. Triple H gets the win in a little over 16 minutes.
That is fine.
It's an Eastern Caribbean cruise with Grey Goose.
Of course you had to play that. Grey Goose.
All right. Are we backstage at all here?
No, I think it's... I want to...
Maritella's backstage.
I think it's... do we go backstage? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
Let's take a break. I do know we should do that. There is a backstage. We'll cover it.
Yes.
No, there isn't. It's after the next one. I need a break. Okay. I got my DVD of the Forbidden City Invitational. This came in. So.
With Maritella. I'd like the under the covers shrimp. All right, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we have three matches left. Technically two, but then there's an impromptu match. More hot women, and then, of course, our chamber main event for the WWE Championship. But coming up, more words. We got to get out of this segment because...
there's not many on... I'm looking forward to everything.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show, right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
I could be racking up any kind of bill. Oh, not too many surprises. You get a martini, you can get whatever you want.
All right.
We are back. Racking up a bill. Big Lou racked up a bill. What the hell are you talking about?
Randy Orton. All right, so PlaceToBeNation.com is your place to be, as it should be each and every day. Brian Bayless had his Raw rundown. Of course, we are 2 weeks out of WrestleMania. We'll be talking about that, Scott. Like you mentioned, we talked about it on the Kevin Kelly Show last night, which you can also find at PlaceToBeNation.com. But we'll be talking about it more coming up next week as well. WrestleMania Top 10 series continues with Stephen Ferrari up through WrestleMania 22. He's doing almost one of these things a day is going up, where he's doing he's watching every Mania, and he has a top 10 match counter. And matches come in, matches go off as he keeps moving through these. He's got other random top 10 lists. So it's a quick read. It's an easy read. It's a good read. Be sure to check that out. Get yourself into the Mania state of mind. Russell Sellers had a piece informing you of the comics you need to read before you go see Batman versus Superman. So he's trying to get you prepped for that big movie that's coming out. Are you going to see that thing?
I probably will. I don't know if I'm going to go tomorrow, but I'm sure I'll go. I mean, I'm not looking crazy forward to it, but I'm definitely going to see it.
There you go. A ringing endorsement for Ben Morse.
There you go.
Seinfeld, the series rewatch continued with season 7, episode 1, The Engagement. So as we move into the final third as far as seasons go for the Seinfeld rewatch. New Between the Sheets, March 15th to 21st, 1995. Chris and Bix joined by Kevin Marshall, so be sure to check that out.
It's not called Under the Covers.
No, unfortunately not. New Scott Keith exclusive rant. His show rants will now be exclusively at PlayStation.com, looking at the World Class Championship from 126-83. And you can also read all about World Class in our excellent Network Adventure series that we completed, the World Class run, and now we're continuing on. And we did the MSG House Show from Hulk Hogan defeating Iron Sheik for the title back in January of 84. This week we have a Mid-South that should be up Wednesday. So be sure to keep tabs on the Network Adventure series. Will and I were back last week, the new Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast. We built our ultimate WrestleMania card from WrestleMania 22 to 31. We traveled through time to say, what would have happened if Stephanie McMahon didn't marry Triple H? What if she had married someone else? So we took a look at that and all the repercussions that could have fallen from there. And plenty of other fun and frivolity, as always. Where the big boys play, Chad and Parv wrapped up their Top 100 Greatest Wrestlers Ever special. This is a must-listen for you guys. It's in two parts. They do 100 to 41 and then 40 to number one. They went through and got that completed. And, of course, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continued on with Saturday Night's Main Event from May 27th, 1989. So be sure to check that out. And, of course, you can always check out our free ebooks if you click the link on the right-hand side, PlayStation.com. Takes you over to Barnes & Noble. You can download that. It's absolutely free. It has our first set of pay-per-view refresh reviews. So WrestleMania 1 through, I believe, King of the Ring 93. That sound right?
No, Survivor Series 92.
All of. Oh, 92, right. Okay.
92. And by the way, one of a good source of mine, of ours, JR, at Barnes & Noble said that it still is the number one most downloaded ebook in the pop culture section of BarnesandNoble.com.
There you go. So get it on history. Make it.
Dominating.
Also dominated iTunes. You can search the Place to Be podcast. You can search PWO-PTBN, and you can search Kevin Kelly Show. You follow all three of those, you get each and every show that we offer here, and we have an extensive podcast network well worth subscribing for. So, PlaceToBeNation.com. You can hit us up on Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BeNation, Instagram, Tumblr, all the social media sites. We're out there with the president, so be sure to check us out each and every day. Appreciate the follows, the comments, the feedback, all of it. So, speaking of feedback, Scott, we should continue ours here with our next match.
Indeed. Let us continue on from Albany. This match just actually was booked at this moment in time.
Right now, this very moment.
Very moment, because it's been kind of percolating from the backstage skits. Tell us what they are, JR.
Hopefully Black brings out a gun at a club.
Beginning on December 5th, Shelton Benjamin got mired in a losing streak. Of course, always the hot gimmick you can give a guy. On December 26th, he lost a match to John Cena, and Shelton received a phone call from someone scolding him for the loss and saying they would be in the arena next week. On 1-2, Shelton lost again to Chris Masters, and after the match, his mama showed up backstage and ripped into him for losing. She told him she would be hanging around from now on to get him back on track winning matches, and Mama was portrayed by an actual actress, Thea Vidal. Was the actress that portrayed it, and of course was played up off of, I guess, I don't know, was it the Chunky Soup Mama? Was it Big Mama's House? I don't know, something along those lines. Basically, this type
Medea or whatever the fucking name is.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's the kind of idea here. So she's just, you know, stereotypical. So impromptu match booked here when, of course, Mama and Vis had their dalliance back in catering. Shelton and Mama come to the ring, and Mama told Viscera to come out so Shelton could get revenge, and Shelton seemed nervous and a little pissed off that Mama was putting him in this situation. But here we are. You know, let's talk about Mama first. On the surface, it's stupid, and it kind of makes Shelton look like a pussy. But, I don't know, she was kind of endearing. I thought she was funny. Like, you could tell that she actually was an actual actress. You know what I mean? She kind of outclassed a lot of the other people on the show. Looking back, I didn't mind her on this show. I thought she was pretty funny, like yelling at ringside constantly, some of the shit she was saying, and really bought into the character. I thought she did a nice job.
I hated it. I thought it was terrible. She was fine in terms of the role she was playing, but I thought it was unnecessary. And I actually did not like the yelling during the match. I thought it was grating and I hated it from the beginning. Yeah. I almost felt like it was a gimmick that was kind of punishing Shelton. Why, I don't know. He had a great 2005,
don't think it's punching him. If anything, I think trying to help him. Like, this is the kind of thing that Vince gets behind. You know what I mean? Like, this is the kind of thing he would push. Like, oh, yeah, mama! You know? This is, I mean, to me, that's what it is. Like, he's better off with this than just being, like, you know...
a loser.
Mid-card Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe. I just... I understand the reasoning why they did it. I just hated her. I couldn't stand her. I honestly couldn't.
Show me those tits!
Vis, save me some of that ass.
Tap it, Vis. Anyway,
oh, boy.
I liked Mama. So she calls out Vis for a fight. Shelton looks trepidatious. Vis comes out. Impromptu match is underway. Mama talks shit from the floor. Shelton tries a headlock, and we get Vis in the full Sex Machine gimmick now, by the way, with the pajamas, the music, the pelvic thrusts.
Yes.
It's all there. Pretty much just the big bang bust in human form. Shelton tries to use speed, but Viscera keeps him off balance with his size. Vis hits a big spine buster, but Mama gets in his face on the floor. Shelton rolls out there too. They trade blows on the floor, but Shelton catches Vis coming back in with two big running knees. Shelton hits a flying clothesline off the top for two. Works the leg as Mama's ranting at ringside. Vis comes back again using his size, hits a sidewalk slam, and does his big friggin' sex thrust Viagra move that they called. Which is an odd one, but he does it. Vis misses a splash. Mama smashes him with the purse, and Shelton hits a spin kick for the win. Really a blah match. All the focus on Mama. But Shelton won, which he deserves to do. You know, the Mama stuff to me isn't wasting him. Like, stuff like the match like this is wasting his talent. So hopefully they get him out of it soon. But I didn't mind it. I didn't mind that Mama helped him win. You know, he survived the Visagra, so that was good. But I don't know. It's something for him, at least. Something's better than nothing.
Yeah, I guess so. I just, she was so grating the whole, I'm going to get your belt. I'm going to get the belt. And, it's just, it was killing
me. She's
an
actress. She's acting.
I was waiting to see if Vince, you know, you're goofing now, but at that time I was waiting for a Vince skit with her, you know, but, the match was fine. And Vis actually worked pretty well with Shelton. It was, you know, considering it was thrown together at the last, well, I'm sure it was planned, but on camera it was thrown together at the last minute. I thought they worked fine. Vis was a fun gimmick, and it was, I enjoyed the, you know, the whole love machine and, you know, the pajamas and everything. So I thought it worked out fine, and it was a, you know, it was a good gimmick for him. And
does Viscera in this era have the most comfortable wrestling gear of all time?
I know, really? Could you imagine? Just wrestling in jammies? I mean, can't go wrong with that.
Like velour jammies.
I know, yeah, even better. Expensive, high-end jammies. I want cashmere jammies.
Give me my silk.
So, yeah, I mean, the match itself was very good, actually. But I don't know. She just drove me bonkers, but that's all right. I mean, I don't know how much more you see her on pay-per-view, but I know on Raw she's on literally every week.
Lay on her, like, thrust your hips.
I'm telling you, there was no doubt that I thought a Vince skit was coming at some point.
Balls deep.
The Forbidden City Invitational. Okay.
This one better win it.
So, there you go. Shelton wins, knee deep in the balls, as Viscera wanted to break off a piece of his mother's chocolate cream pie, or whatever the hell he said in catering.
Anyway.
All right. I don't think we go backstage. I think we dive right into the next match.
I wish we went backstage.
Yeah. But our next match, our second women's match of the evening, this one the more traditional women's fill before the main event. Really, there's not much to say here. It is a bra and panties gauntlet match.
Hmm.
The participants are Maria, Candace, Tori Wilson, Victoria, Ashley.
Yes.
All and of course, I don't know if this other one was a surprise or not, but not bad.
Lazy booking.
Mm.
So they throw them all out for the TNA Fest, even though we just had our sex match. You know, fine for sex appeal. This padding the show though, like this is pure just raw stuff. I don't know. So Maria and Candace start, both look good, but Candace, you know, she really has the good moves and you know. The sex factor kind of locks it up more than Maria at this point. Maria seems very tentative and hesitant. Candace is much more confident in the ring. She does a decent job with some solid knee lifts. Yanks Maria off the top. Maria comes back and takes off Candace's top. Candace tries a tarantula type move, but Maria hooks her and pulls her pants off for the win. Tori comes out next. Both almost get the pants off, but fight through it. Tori hits a low drop kick and a brutally awful, ugly handspring elbow. Just awful, terrible stuff. Rhea keeps plugging away, kicking Tori to the floor, and then yanks her top off. Tori hits a spear, but argues with the referee, and Rhea pulls her pants off. Victoria's out next, and she's focused on very focused. She's like power walks to the ring. Victoria kicks and pounds on Rhea aggressively, hits a standing moonsault, and easily rips the pants off. You know, I thought Victoria looked dominant here. She shouldn't sell it all for Rhea, so that's fine. Mm-hmm. And then we get the surprise entrant of Mae Young and Moolah. Men still around.
Telling you, Vince had a thing for them. Oh, there's any doubt about that.
Mae and Moolah, yeah. Mae and Moolah play to the crowd and march around the ring. As Vist looks on confused,
Victoria. Vist was getting ready.
Confusing all my sex symbols. So we get a strip show music starts, and Mae strips down to her bra and knickers. Just awful lame nonsense, completely just burning time. Victoria grabs Mae from behind and hammers away at her, and then Moolah pulls her off, and Mae rips off Victoria's shirt. Mae accidentally almost rips off the bra, too, which was pretty funny. Mae and Moolah leave after what feels like an eternity, and then Ashley comes out, runs right into a stiff kick and some clubbing blows. She rolls through a widow's peak and pulls off Victoria's pants. Real stupid. I mean, not even good TNA besides Candace in the beginning. Ashley's not ready for any of this, and, you know, she was hidden here, it was clear. Like, she doesn't do much and then just rips the pants off, and then Ashley shows her bra and panties anyway. And, you know, you can do this with some kind of dumb skit backstage, a Raw magazine spread on Raw, and, you know, I'm all about the TNA and the good-looking women. We didn't need this time killer here. It was really aimless. It was really pointless, and it wasn't even really good TNA. Like I said, Candace was the only one that really showed anything off. If you're not going to show that off, what's the point? 11 minutes this thing went, and the Mae and Moolah thing felt like 15 out of the 11. So, I mean, that was just never ending. I'm done. I got nothing else to say, but I don't know if you do.
I liked when you said that. Hammering on Mae Young while Vince is backstage. Hammer Mae Young. it was a waste. Candace looked unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I was big into Ashley at this point. I thought she looked hot, but yeah, I loved Ash, but you're right. She had no clue what was going on. She wasn't great. At least Christy Hemme was grasping it, or trying to grasp it. I feel like Ashley wasn't even trying to grasp it, you know, like, throw her in there, you know, rip off her panties, you know, rip off her tights. And that's pretty much it. It was bad. It was bad. All right. Time now for our main event. The WWE Championship. And we are inside the chamber. And speaking of people that want to tap Jesus out and liking black people.
Touch me in the pouring rain, and the moment that you wander far from me, I want to feel you in my arms again, and you come to me on a summer breeze, keep me warm in your love, then you softly leave, and it's me you need to show, how deep is your love, is your love found?
Might as well get the whole family in today.
Oh, how I like it.
You had the three older brother. You had the little brother earlier, so I figured I'd put the rest of the three brothers in today as well. All right. It is New Year's Revolution, which means, JR, a feud was concluding, so there was no technically a number one contender at the moment. So might as well throw a bunch of guys at our WWE champion. How did we get here?
Well, sir, on 12/5, Eric Bischoff announced it'd be Elimination Chamber for John Cena's WWE Championship at New Year's Revolution. And the following week, we had some qualifying matches begin as Kurt Angle defeated Ric Flair, Carlito defeated Shelton Benjamin, Shawn Michaels beat The Big Show, Chris Masters beat Viscera, and Kane defeated Triple H. On 12/26, all six men competed in a Beat the Clock series to determine who would enter last. Kane would finish with the best time, earning the final entry position. Oh, final entry. It was also on that night that Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon had a heated confrontation around the Montreal incident, spurred on by the release of the new Bret Hart DVD. On 1/2, McMahon caused Michaels to lose to Kane and then told Shawn he'd have to enter the chamber match first. And later in the night, Angle defeated Cena in a first blood match. After the bout, the chamber competitors were involved in a big brawl that ended with everyone laid out on the mat. So here we be. Chamber time. Interesting mix of talent. Seems set up for Cena to retain, but you got Michaels and Angle in there as clear top threats. Kane's been rebuilt into a threat again nicely as well. Nice reward for Masters, has been really good and overlooked in his role. We've talked a lot about him. And a big spot for Carlito, too, who's aligned with Masters, and they're kind of looking to take out the old guard together. Daivari still with Angle, Cena booed loudly. Things have gotten worse week by week in most arenas. Angle's maniacal in the pod, like a caged animal throughout the opening series of this, the match here. Michaels has the best reaction from the crowd with the most cheers, and him and Cena open things up. Interesting choice as they put Cena with the most over guy to start the match, which I thought was interesting. They're not doing him any favors here. Trade holds early, landing strikes here and there. Cena booed at any time he goes on offense, and then we get a tease of chain spots, but both block the attempts. Michaels controls a bit until Cena gets booed during a punch and comeback. Carlito enters next and goes right at Cena, and he gets cheered. He lands a dropkick and then a somersault senton on Michaels on the steel, and Carlito looks really good here, working over both men. Gets a near fall and a suplex on Michaels. They all trade off on offense with basic strikes until a double flapjack on Carlito. Angle enters next and is a madman, crushing everyone. Germans, and he's absolutely on fire, looking like the easy favorite as he just destroyed everyone. Angle sends Michaels into the steel with a belly-to-belly, and then Carlito with a belly-to-back. Angle then smashes Cena in the corners, clobbering with stiff kicks. Michaels gets catapulted into the chain wall and sliced open. Angle rams Michaels into the pod and suplexes Cena again, and Angle's just on fire, completely untouchable here. Carlito grabs Angle, and Angle reverses to an ankle lock, but he hangs on long enough as Masters enters the match and makes the save. And the ankle lock's really getting less effective over the last 12 months, by the way. We've had Cena hang on. We've had Michaels hang on. Now Carlito hangs on. Masters mows down Michaels and Cena, but Angle grabs him the ankle lock. The hold gets broken, but Kurt hooks the ankle lock on Cena. Michaels drills him with Sweet Chin Music and eliminates him in a huge shock. To me, Angle seemed prepped to maybe finally get the win and get the title back, or at least make it to the last spot, but to be the first guy out, and the crowd dies off a bit because they were super into Angle just destroying guys. And I know what they're going for. We'll talk about it later, but I was like shocked at the time. Were you?
Yes, I was very much. And it begs the question, is there issues backstage with Kurt? Because he's been doing a lot of laying down, losing, jobbing, and to be the first guy knocked out here with two guys like Carlito and Chris Masters here, and Kurt's the first one out, it made you think something was going on. That's what that was my assumption anyway.
So, Angle's done. Carlito and Masters work together as promised, dominating Michaels and Cena using strikes in the steel. Michaels is pouring blood after more chain shots. Kane enters last and chops and kicks down Masters and Carlito. Kane comes cleaning house, but gets caught on the top rope. Kane comes back and hits a choke slam on Michaels and Cena. Kane breaks the master lock, but eats a backstabber and sits up. Carlito and Masters keep working to double team and eventually hit a double DDT, and then work together to push him down and eliminate him. So, fantastic showing for Masters and Carlito so far. They're working together. They're executing the plan they laid out, that they're going to pick off the old guys and usher in their era. Kane was easy to sacrifice for that story plot point. Carlito and Masters keep dominating. The great Michaels cut in the cage, and then Chuck Cena all around the ring. Michaels makes a comeback with the crowd cheering him on. He fights off both men, hits a flying elbow on Cena. Michaels hits Sweet Chin Music on Cena, but gets mauled and eliminated by Carlito. And that just pisses the crowd off even more. And, you know, in some ways it's shrewd booking, Scott, because you're leaving Cena with the two pure heels. But on the flip side now, everyone's pissed off because you eliminated the guys they liked. So it's like you can't win, because if you leave Cena in there at the end with Michaels or Angle, he's getting booed. Maybe he gets cheered at least over Masters and Carlito. But, again, everyone's pissed off. Are they even going to care at this point? Masters and Carlito look great overall and have more than delivered after being given the ball throughout all this. Cena fights his way back into control with the loud boos, during loud booing. Hits a five-knuckle shuffle on Carlito, but Masters blocks the FU and tosses Cena to the steel. Masters does the DDT on Cena on the steel, busts him open. Masters and Carlito hammer away in the cut, and they're looking great as a team here. Masters gets the master lock on Cena. But a low blow, Carlito hits a low blow and stabs Masters in the back, rolls him up and eliminates him. Cena then recovers and rolls up Carlito to win the match and gets a pop, you know, kind of that reactionary pop. Smart booking, I thought, because the crowd reacted to the flash pin. They didn't have time to boo a comeback from Cena, so I thought that was kind of shrewd. Solid chamber match. Not one of the best ones we've had, but they had some good spots and drama. And I thought they really worked hard to book this thing in a way to try and get Cena cheered. It didn't completely work, but they did everything they could. And I thought Masters, Carlito, and Angle were the three standout stars of all this. I thought Masters and Carlito got the chance to showcase themselves, and they worked well. They executed the plan. They did everything they had to do. And Angle was just a machine like he's been pretty much since, what, SummerSlam when he destroyed Eugene. I mean, pretty much since then, he's been on fire.
Right.
So what did you think of all this? And what did you think of the push that Masters and Carlito are getting?
I thought I thought they were just like goofing off the whole Masters Carlito thing when they met backstage and everything. But I tell you, they kind of carried the middle late portion of this match. Sean was simply there to, you know, make everybody look good and obviously, you know, get the smarkies pumped up and then have their hearts broken. It was unique. And sure, now we're used to it, but back then we were not used to an incredible babyface, or supposed to be incredible babyface, getting just absolutely torched. I mean, like 05, even the Kurt matches, there was some very audible boos, but still the Cena cheers when he wins were very strong. This is just, I mean, he is getting torched by this Albany crowd. And it's very unique because other than Kane, who fans probably didn't really care about, at this point, Cena's screwed because you got two young heels that the fans would love to see kind of get their shots. And then you got Kurt and Sean, who speak for themselves. So he was screwed either way. I don't think there was any real way you could go about it. And I like your point about how they had to have Cena win quick, because if he tried to do his dopey comebacks and all those weird, you know, he would have got murdered. So having him win quick was a smart idea.
Obviously, right, and they almost made it like he got. I mean, again, they're contradicting themselves left and right, because it almost makes him look lucky, you know, which is right. Fine. I mean, he's been double teamed a lot, but again, he hasn't looked super strong.
No,
in any of these shows.
Yeah. No, he got beat up badly by Kurt in most of these matches. Well, Kurt, you know, to his, you know, his fault, kind of let it happen, and I think maybe that's where the issues backstage are coming in. But no, Kurt didn't do Cena any favors, and he's wasn't done any favors here either. So,
and I remember at this time when he lost, like thinking, oh my god, he won here too. Like, and the show's just gonna end with Cena. I mean, already you're starting to get the overcoming the odds stuff with Cena. It was like,
yeah,
like this seemed like such a golden opportunity to get the belt off him in an easy way, give it to Angle or give it to Michaels or something, you know what I mean, to mix it up instead of just Cena retaining. But as we find out, it isn't the end, Scott, because Vince McMahon comes out and says the night's not over. Hang on. Don't go anywhere. This night is not over.
And it was immediate.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally, he rolls him up.
Well, I think they had to, because they didn't want people tuning out, being pissed right. off, leaving the building. Like, they had to kind of lock everyone in. So he congratulates Cena, and that gets a loud boos. And then he brings out Edge to cash in the Money in the Bank. The commentators are shocked as Edge has hinted he would wait until Mania. And they did that well. Like, Edge had recently said he's waiting until Mania. They teased that he was leaving because he didn't want to do the internet thing earlier. So they set it up nicely. Edge hits the ring, and he's bouncing around as Cena's sitting there bloodied. Match finally starts, and the Edge attacks as the crowd is just cheering him on like crazy. Edge gets a pair of near falls, and then a super close two count on a spear. Great false finish to build worry and panic that Cena may survive. I love that, because the crowd's out freaking out. And then Edge hits another spear and wins the title in an awesome moment. The crowd is going crazy. You get full credibility to the Money in the Bank gimmick. It makes Edge an instant star to cap off his career year. Lita and Edge have a great celebration. The crowd just got freaking out. Great moment in history. It worked so well because it was unexpected. Cena's been annoyingly dominant. Everyone was ready for him to take a loss. And it was a feel-good moment for a long-time stalwart that's been up and down, had a lot of injuries. You know, a guy that deserved this moment and fought hard for this moment, and he gets it. And again, it pays off almost a year's worth of builds. A great close to a pretty shaky pay-per-view, and it brings an instantly fresh feel to Raw.
I mean, it was amazing how the crowd literally snapped. But I think what's weird is, when I first saw it live back then, I thought the crowd was like through the roof. But as the crowd's coming down the ramp, I think a decent percentage of the crowd's like, oh no, you know what's going to happen. We're going to get another incredible comeback, and he's going to land. He's going to, you know, F you Edge and just kind of fall on him and get another lucky, you know, oh my God, I'm dead pin and just bury the whole roster. So I think even at that moment, as great as the crowd was and how hot as they were when Edge got in the ring, I still think a percentage of them's like, oh, please don't blow this. Please don't blow this. Please don't blow this. And then finally, when the three count happened, the roof blew off. Literally 14 years to the month when Sid dumped Hogan out of the Rumble, and that place popped. Of course, they temper those. They totally morphed the hell out of, or warped those cheers in ensuing superstars. Here, I mean, the crowd just went nuts. And here's a guy who's battled, you know, who was a stalwart of the I mean, if you look at the faces of the Attitude Era, you know, Austin, Rock, Triple H, Foley, Taker, you got to put Edge in that category too, particularly for the tag division. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of the face of the mid-card during the invasion and the war with the Alliance in 2001. And now here he is. And then he got hurt. He was gone for so long. I mean, he blew his Achilles, what, February 03. And he's gone till, Jesus, over a year. I mean, he doesn't come back till, what, April 04. You know, and now here he is finally getting his moment. And one thing that needs to be mentioned here, and I think credit needs to go to, there's a great shot later on towards the very end of the pay-per-view when John Cena is halfway up the ramp and he just gives this look with all this blood pouring down his face of, I can't believe I lost. I can't believe it. You know, and as much as he was probably fairly rattled, because, you know, he wasn't used to getting booed. So I bet he was a little bit rattled coming down the ramp at the beginning of that match. I credit him for...
Did you say he's not used to getting booed?
Not like that.
I don't know. He's been booed pretty consistently for a while now.
Yeah, but it's been very 50-50. This is like, this was like 90-10. I mean, I don't think, even the Kurt matches, there's been some smatterings of cheers. There was no cheers on this night in Albany. None. And, but I credit him for really selling the moment, giving Edge his due, but just that look like, you son of a bitch. I had it. I battled for 28 minutes in this monstrosity of a cage with five other guys. I had it. I won. And you just took it from me. The look he gave, I gotta give Cena his due in that aspect. He sold the moment just as much as Edge's moment, as he sold his moment.
Yeah, and they did a good job too. Like, you know, it instantly puts over the gimmick. Like, yep. Really well.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have a guy cashes in a sneaky manner, puts him over as a heel. He wins, so now you know it's valuable. It's not a waste. They built it up for 9 months. They did well with that. I mean, he got injured a couple times, so it helped them hide it. But, no, I mean, it gets over the Money in the Bank gimmick just in time for the next one. So, overall, you know, an up-and-down show, but a strong finish, a really memorable finish. I mean, arguably, it's up there for most memorable pay-per-view, you know, finishing sequences of all time when it comes to WWE, I think. Yep. You know, we'll talk about it on our next show, but it leads to some pretty good segments on Raw, too. So,
right.
No, good. I mean, yeah, it's good. Edge deserves it. Cena needed a break. Unfortunately, it's, you know, as we'll see, not as probably not as long as it should have been, but we'll talk about that as we move along. So, overall, the show... Yeah, it was okay, I guess. I like Triple H, Big Show, and The Chamber, probably the best. Other than that, nothing
it's
great.
It's a weird show.
I'll say this. It wasn't boring. Like, I don't think it was good, but I wasn't bored by it.
I wasn't either. No, I agree. I wasn't either. I did enjoy that. Yeah, but if I, you know, after you listen to our, after you listen to this, throw on the network. Throw it on if you have some time. It's a little shorter than your average show. It's like 2:38, I think. 239. Give it a look if you haven't seen it in a while, and you know, see if you agree with us or not. I mean, I gotta say, I think it's a unique show. It's not the greatest thing on the planet, but it's not unwatchable. And I really think these last 5 minutes with Edge winning, and just I gotta again stress just the camera shot and the way Cena sold it, just on the ramp, just looking down the ramp, like I had it. I did it again. I conquered the odds, and now I'm not champion anymore. And it also makes things very interesting because at the time we didn't know what was going on SmackDown. So this brought up an interesting point. Was Cena in line to win the Rumble? Because we didn't know what, and we'll get into this when we do, on our next Vault, when we do the Rumble, we didn't know what was going on SmackDown, because a big thing would happen on SmackDown that kind of opens things up a little bit. But at the time,
right,
you thought to yourself, well, you're not going to have, I mean, is Cena just going to win the rematch? Was this just to get the, just to execute the briefcase and move on? I mean, who knew? So I have to say, there was a lot of, when this show ended at the time, you definitely thought to yourself, there's a lot of intrigue going on right now. The build to Chicago is very mysterious right now. You're not quite sure what's going on, which is good. You like that. You don't want predictability at all. So
whatever happens, Edge, predictability. No.
The Milkman, the Paperboy, Evening TV. Yep, good. That's what I'm saying. I couldn't think of the first thing. I knew Paperboy and Evening TV. I just had to remember Milkman.
That's good.
So there you go. Yeah. Edge is, I know, I lost my train of thought when you did that. I was going to keep singing the song. Everywhere you look.
Good enough.
Edge is your WWE champion.
So another show in the books. That's episode 399 down, and we just sneak a little bit into 2006 with this one. So
yep,
good to be here. Next week, probably late next week, we'll be back with episode 400. We're still hammering out the formatics of it a little bit, so we'll keep everyone posted as to what's there, but be sure to check it out. And then, of course, we'll be back after that with Royal Rumble 2006, one of the worst Rumbles by memory. We'll see if it holds up as one of the worst.
I don't think so, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, holds up in a bad way is like the worst.
Yeah, so. I think it definitely does.
We'll talk about that. And we've got some other tricks up the sleeve, too. Be sure to keep track of our social media network for updates as we move along. So, again, visit PlayStation.com. Keep up to date on all our feeds and iTunes. Listen to all our shows. Scott, you got a main event coming up? When's that?
Main event, two big podcasts next week. Sunday night will be the Sports Evolution MLB preview show. We're going to load that show up. We got a big, big roundtable of guys. And then next Thursday will be the main event, WrestleMania preview. Got another roundtable of fine gentlemen. We'll discuss the Mania card, Hall of Fame, and a lot more. So two big shows coming up on the feed next week.
Excellent. And, of course, like we mentioned before, check out the Kevin Kelly show from last night. And New Dangerous Alliance will be next week as well, so leading up to Mania. So lots to do. Also, big project coming, big series. It'll encompass all 5 days next week of Mania Week. Kicks off Monday, so keep your eyes peeled. It's a written series, one of our biggest endeavors that we've undertaken here at PlayStation.com. So keep your eyes posted for that. It kicks off next Monday, and that's one of the topics we'll probably talk about on PTB 400. So,
yes.
For Scott, I'm JT, 399 down. We'll talk to you next time, episode 400. Thanks, everyone.
It's the Shockwall City Invitational.
Yeah.
on a cruise.
Southern Cruise, Green Cruise. Randy Orton is going to Dayton.
Dayton. I've been the same.